Our Gemara Dafyud Aleph emphasized that really it's not Rubid Issachaman that we're curious about, it's really Rubid Alessachaman. And as we've discussed, Chazaka and Rubid Alessachaman have a lot in common and may indeed be linked terms. So we talk about a Chazaka, the idea that we have the right or the obligation to assume that things are the way they have been. So that the Gemara discusses in the previous Amud in Yud Amud Beis and asks about how we know that we have a concept of following the Chazaka. So the Gemara gives various examples. Just to focus on one, the Gemara talks about if the Kohen has to declare a house as a house that has tzaras, so how does he do that? Because he has to be able to establish that there is a mark on the wall that is of sufficient size, and then he has to go outside and declare it to be leprous, if that's the right translation, which it really isn't. Mitzora is the sign that it is tzaras. So by the time he's outside, how does he know he didn't shrink? So apparently we rely on Chazaka. So the reason I'm taking this backwards is because it perhaps is parallel to what we were saying yesterday, that yesterday when we talked about that the Gemara distinguishes between Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Lessa Kaman, and we suggested that the nature of the Limud could potentially be different. Because when it comes to Ruba de Issa Kaman, so that we're confident we get from Acher Rabba Mahatos. But when it comes to Ruba de Lessa Kaman, so the cases the Gemara brings, even though it's not necessarily the Maskana, but just as far as the flow of the discussion, the cases that the Gemara brings are not direct sources. It's not the Torah specifically saying, follow Ruba de Lessa Kaman, and they're not even the kind of indirect sources you might have with a drush of Halacha Moshe Misina. Essentially, they're cases telling us that we use these cases requiring us to rely on the Ruba de Lessa Kaman. So essentially, it's not so much that the Gemara is teaching us a din, but confirming the fact that we work off certain presumptions. So we work off the presumption that we don't need to look for trouble, for example, to put it one way. And here, now to reflect back on this Gemara, it's a similar kind of dynamic that the Gemara is basically saying, how do you know that we work off the assumption that which was is, and that things haven't changed? So the Ramban over here notes that the idea that we will work off that l'chumra, that we have to assume for chumra purposes that things are what they were unless we know they've changed, says that we know misvara. That's the kind of thing which just mustama is true. It just makes sense to say it's the case. So what the Gemara is trying to establish here is how do we know that it's a affirmative din that we can rely on an even l'kula. You have to figure out, though, how these cases are necessarily relevant to that. So this first case, for example, is a case which comes out of the Chumrah, essentially. The Beis Matisyo quotes a contemporary Sefer that, by Barry Brand, that suggests that the Chiddush of these Rayas is that a Chezkas Isser is not a simple Chazaka Meikara. It's not just that, okay, something was Usser yesterday, so it's Usser today also. But that an Isser has a claim as if it was a party to a dispute. That just like if you have two people fighting and one has possession, so we say he is the Mukhzak, and therefore that gives his claim a certain standing. So too, a prohibition, an Isser, has a voice, so to speak, and that plays a role in the back and forth between two things. It's not just what was today is the same as what was yesterday, but that the status of Isser has a active tvia, has an active claim. But that's hard to know how to apply. So he suggests differently, the Beis Matisyo, that really the Chiddush here is that in the case, let's say, of this Bayis HaManuga, so it's not just that we're saying what was, is, and continues to be, but we are creating a new halachic status based on what was, because the house is only going to be declared a bayis menuga if the Kohen gives it that official status. So he gives it that official status because he's assuming that what was is still continuing. So it's not just that we're coasting, essentially. It's that the precedent, the status quo ante, is enough to allow a new status to be assigned on that premise. Okay. But it seems like the nature of both Chazakah and, at least theoretically, in terms of the Ruba Delesta Kaman, is that we have a certain premise we need to function off of, for the most part. And what we're bringing here from these psukim is that you can assume that that premise is reliable. That similar questions in both cases. You have to think that something that was changed, or do you have to think that something that is any deviation from the norm? So in both cases, no, you don't have to necessarily worry about that. And we see that the Torah is working off that premise. It doesn't have to be formulated as a din, follow a chazako, follow a lulasa kaman, as much as it just confirms that what we would do in our regular lives, the way we assume that things that have been are still true and that things are the default position, so that that is also the way in which halacha is functioning. So when we plug that back into the general discussion here of Ruba d'Issa Kaman and Ruba d'Lessa Kaman, so to discuss a little further about the relationship between the two and also to say a little bit more about what the terms might mean. So first of all, so the sources seem to imply, in some cases more than imply, that a Ruba d'Issa Kaman is stronger than a Ruba d'Lessa Kaman. And it's not obvious why that should be, because logic may indicate in other directions.
Certifiable.
Is that an insult? So that would.
The rove is certifiable.
The rove, you mean you can sign off on it by looking at it. So it's interesting, as the, again, I don't mean to seem obsessed here, but as the Sefer points out, that if you're going to say that the definition and the impact of Ruba d'Issa Kaman is that it's in front of us, so we know the numbers, it's certifiable, so you can identify what the rove is, as opposed to Ruba d'Lessa Kaman, you can't identify what the rove is. So he points out in an interesting way, but the miut in the Ruba d'Lessa Kaman is equally uncertifiable. So it's one thing if you have a strong miut against a weak rove, like what we discussed by Rove HaTali B'Maisa, for example, where maybe there's a rove on one side, but it requires a human initiative, while the miut is there automatically. So the miut is, in that sense, stronger than the rove. So then we could hear that. But here, whatever deficiency there is on the side of the rove, it's the same thing on the miut. So why should the rove not still win out of the miut?
I would say that the fact that there is a rove is certifiable, meaning in Ruba d'Lessa Kaman, we presume that there's a rove. We don't know. It could be 50-50. Like,
okay. So that's also important. So definitely the question of the sliding scale of what we're talking about here is definitely significant. I think this definitely is a part of the approach. So I think it's not just that the rove has greater quantification, but that quantification is part of what makes it a rove in the first place. So Shem and Shkop understands that, mentioned the author of the Shari Osher, that the distinction between the rove and Ruba d'Issa Kaman and the Ruba d'Lessa Kaman is that here you have the two sets, the rove and the rove and the miut, and you know that this item is from one of them. Whatever it was called the parish, Meruba the parish, that whatever has been separated has two options. It's either in set A or in set B, and therefore you have to figure out which one it is. So you have the right to assume it's from the larger group. And just parenthetically, just so we have a good awareness of all the different issues, some of which we won't be able to fully explore, but we know that when we talk about a rove, So we also have a concept of kavua. The Gemara says in a bunch of places, in different contexts, that we only are willing to use the concept of a rov when the item has been separated from whatever mixture it may have started with, or whatever groups it may have started with. So you have, let's say, a piece of meat that is found in the marketplace. And in this marketplace, you have 10 stores, 9 of them are kosher, and one of them is not. It's a very interesting neighborhood. And so if that's the case, so you have the right to assume that kol de parish merubah de parish, that this was separated from the majority, so it's kosher. But let's say you went to one of these 10 stores, and you don't remember which one you went to. Why'd you go to the non-kosher food store? Because maybe you're getting dog food, or you're getting other things. So now you bought meat from one of these places, and you don't remember which one it is. So then we're not entitled to say rov, because that's called kavua. That is something that is set in its place. And you say, kol kavua, kemechtsa mechtsa dami. That whatever is kavua, we don't define it as rov or miut, we define it as beyond those kinds of quantifications. Now, we're not going to be able to do justice to the various definitions and theories on kavua, but I just want to keep it on the table just so we're aware that there are limitations to rov, and that probably does contribute to how we understand things. So when it comes to rubah the esa kaman and rubah the lesa kaman, so we have to figure out a couple things. We have to figure out why would rov of one type be stronger than the other, especially if there is some logic to say the other way. So, for example, like we mentioned yesterday, you might say that Ruba de Lesa Kaman really is stronger, because maybe Ruba de Lesa Kaman really is more of a Mavarer. It means that we really can believe that it's very likely that the Ruba de Lesa Kaman tells us the truth. But when it comes to the Ruba de Issa Kaman, we don't really have a reason to think that it's true. It's more likely, but the other possibility is certainly a possibility. So if the other possibility exists, so it could certainly be, if you have a 75-25 rove, you have four socks in the drawer, and three are black and one is white. So if you pick out one, it's likely that it's black, but there's still certainly a possibility that it's white. So the idea that that kind of rove is really concluding anything for you, it's hard to say. So it makes sense on one level to say that it's weaker, because that's not really a mevarer, that's really just telling you how you have a right to proceed. While a ruba de lesa kaman, you could say that you really do believe that there's no, it's really very likely that unless there's some reason to think there was a deviation from the norm, that this is probably what it is. So say, if this is a fair, using socks, so just to keep it, I don't know if this is a fair assumption, but if you say Stam socks don't have holes in them, so let's say they're new socks, at least, you know, so you have a drawer full of new socks. You say, Stam, new socks don't have holes in them. So you reach in and you don't check, but you assume it doesn't have a hole in it. So presumably you are pretty confident that it doesn't have a hole in it. I think Maury was up first, but he gave up, isn't he?
Haven't we said in the past that, haven't we linked up Ribbit Elisa come on with Hamhaga and Ribbit Elisa come on with fewer?
Not necessarily. We've linked it up with Chazaka, and there are different types of Chazaka. So it's hard to give an absolute classification for one or the other, but there are those who make that, if you make the mathematical equation, there are those who say Hanhaga is a, that Chazaka is Hanhaga, and that Ruben Lesa Kaman is a Chazaka. So if you do that math, you could come to that conclusion, but it's not going to be absolute in either side enough to...
Just Misfara, but Misfara, at least to me, it seems that Ruben Lesa Kaman is harder to say than it's more of, meaning, by saying that it's more of a
chazaka,
we've said.
Well, the other way around, I think chazaka is more of a ruba
de lesa kaman. Right.
Some chazakas are. Depends what
chazaka is. But I mean, it seems that, and now we're saying that ruba de lesa kaman is, or, and what we were saying yesterday, that ruba de lesa kaman is stronger because it's seemingly more of a biura.
Yeah, let's just take a second to discuss that, because not all chazakas are the same. Right? Chazaka means a lot of different things. So the type of chazaka that we're talking about on Yudim Ebeis, so that chazaka meikara, that what was yesterday is today, it's not necessarily true. I mean, in some cases, it has a reality correlation. In some cases, it doesn't. It's just because that was, so for example, when we talked about the previous stuff about machzikim meyis eliyaser, so we saw that some versions of machzikim meyis eliyaser don't correlate at all to reality. Just say, okay, because this was the policy yesterday, it should be the policy today. Even though we know that other things have changed, and it doesn't necessarily mean that that iser should continue. So it depends what we mean by a chazaka. So some usages of the word chazaka, like you say, chazaka, you know, dam pareya toch zmano, you know, somebody's not going to pay back a loan earlier than he has to. So that kind of phrasing is really a ruba de lesta kaman kind of phrasing. So some chazakas are ruba de lesta kamans, and some aren't. So the chazaka of what I could just continue doing what I did yesterday likely is not a birur. Likely that's just a hanhaga. But a chazaka of usually stam situations are like this, and I have no reason to think that it's changed. So then that's probably close to a birur.
Doesn't it run into the same issue of Ruba Telgamesa?
It depends. So that we'll see. I'm going to discuss that a little bit more about, you know, which kind of chazakas are in that category or not. Mayor?
So what is the percentage of the same? Let's say the Ruba Isa command is, I have 10 pairs of socks and one of them has a hole in it, and the Ruba Telgamesa command is generally 10% of socks have holes in it.
Right.
I don't see why one should be more of a biror than the other, or one should be more of an other than the other.
Correct. So it's hard to ignore the fact that numbers should play a role, which is also part of the question here. Because even if we have these different definitions, and even if you tell me, all right, there are two categories, so we have to find a way to establish which category is what, and where the definitions are of each category. But at the end of the day, they're both roves. At the end of the day, you still have 90-10. So if the Torah says, Acher Abba Mahatos, why should we even think that we should distinguish? What's the basis to say, well, maybe only some roves, but not all roves? And that's in addition to the question of, if I had to choose a rove, maybe I'd like Ruba de Lesta Kaman better than Ruba de Issa Kaman.
I just want to know why Ruba de Lesta Kaman is more of a viewer than Ruba de Issa Kaman.
Because if the numbers are the same, it's definitely a relevant question, because it may be that it's important to figure out what our numbers are, especially as some of the Stifler and others point out, that maybe the reason this Gemara is hard to draw conclusions from these cases, is because a lot of these cases are not stam Ruba de Issa Kamans or Ruba de Lesta Kamans. They're overwhelming Ruba de Lesta Kamans. They're the kind of things where it's incredibly unlikely that there would have been a hole under the place where you shechted the animal. And how likely is that? So we're not just saying that we don't look for trouble. We're saying we don't look for very, very unlikely trouble. So that's a part of the challenge of this Gemara, of using this Gemara as a final source. Because, and indeed that's why, maybe why we don't seem to use it as a final source. But a lot of these cases, they don't seem to prove that you could follow a Ruba de Lesta Kaman of 51-49. They maybe prove that you could follow a 99-1 or a 95-5.
So it's a percentage just makes a difference.
Percentage should make a difference. You're saying, looking at these cases.
Right, I'm saying inherently, the concept of Ruba de Lesta Kaman versus the concept of the Lesta Kaman, I don't see how one is more of a viewer than the other.
So you could say that if you formulate it as you don't have to look for trouble, you're saying that you have the right to assume that unless you know otherwise, everything is the default position. But in the case where you just happen to have more black socks than white socks, so there's no reason to assume that every sock is black. Just more socks are black. Certainly.
I guess you could formulate it that way, but it doesn't seem very fair to formulate it that way.
Well, who are we trying to be fair to as part of the question? But what do you mean by fair, I guess?
Like the numbers.
I mean, because Lamaise, you should say that at the end of the day, if you have a 90-10 rove, it should mean the same thing no matter what is controlling that rove. Possibly. But it also might depend on why you're paying attention to the rove. Are you paying attention to the rove because you think that it should just be a guide for your behavior, in which case maybe that is a fair policy? Or are you saying that you're paying attention to the rove because you really believe it's true? So, and those are two different formulations which may impact things here. So, for example, Rav Shimon Shkop, as I'd say before, Rav Shimon Shkop in the Shari Yosher, so he explains a little bit why it should be that Ruba de Issa Kaman has an advantage over Ruba de Lesta Kaman, because in the case of Ruba de Issa Kaman, so the suffix is created by the rove and the miyut. So you have in front of you, or in the world, 75 Black Sox and 25 White Sox. So that's what creates the suffix of what this is. So what should you follow? So then follow the rove. It makes more sense. It's more likely to, that it's from the larger pile than from the smaller pile. But in the case of Aruba, the lesser come on. The issue that you're trying to figure out is not caused by the presence of other things. It's that you simply don't know. You have an animal, you don't know if it's a treif or not. So you have a katan, you don't know if he's a saris or not. You just don't know what is the story with what I'm trying to figure out. So you're looking around. Are there any tools that I can use to try to come to a conclusion about this? Well, maybe I could say, yeah, most of the time people would be a certain way, or by default people would be a certain way. And therefore, let me enter that into the equation. So the rov isn't inherently a part of the discussion. It's something you're trying to bring into discussion as a tool. And if that's the case, how do you know that it's a sufficient tool? In other words, to say it maybe a little bit sharper, that if you have a choice, it's definitely A or B. So let's make it A, because A is the larger group. So if we don't know what to do, so then why shouldn't we work with A? A is more likely. And especially if you're trying not to figure out the truth, but you're figuring out how you're going to proceed. It's even if you say, for example, Safik Daraisa L'chumra. So you say, okay, the Safik means I have no idea. I have no idea what to do. So Safik Darabanan, Safik Daraisa L'kula, if that was a possibility, what it meant, all right, if you don't know what anything, what if you don't know what the story is, I have no idea whether this is kosher or not. So then maybe the Torah didn't necessarily address Sveikas. The Torah only told you, don't intentionally eat non-kosher food. Maybe that's what something Daraisa, Bakula Daraisa would mean. So therefore, as long as I don't know this food to be non-kosher, I don't have a prohibition of eating it. But that's it. Mamish don't know anything, so I have a suffix. But if I have a question what to do, and there's a reason to go one way or the other, because one is more, so then it makes sense to follow that, just misvara. Even though it's certainly possible that it's not that. But I have to choose between two possibilities. I have no information. So I might as well choose the thing that has more likelihood to it. So as a policy of how to behave, it makes sense to follow that policy, even though it doesn't necessarily tell us anything about the truth. Sorry, let's take back how this works. Got a noise coming out of somewhere. All right. But if we're trying to actually figure out what are the realities here, so then maybe we have a higher standard, and we have to acknowledge the various possibilities and trying to bring in, well, most people are this. How do you know that that counts? How do you know that that's really effective? So that could be, on some level, the dynamic between trying to address where Rubid Issa come on and Rubid Lesa come on come out. But that being said, it's still, at the end of the day, like Meir was saying, if the numbers are there, the numbers are there. So maybe we should say that if we have a rove, if we have a 90% rove, then let's follow the 90% rove. So maybe it's possible that the whole dynamic in this Gemara is that really, Meikar Hadin, all the roves should be treated the same way. But there's a reason to think that Ruba de Issa Kaman should be better than Ruba de Lesa Kaman in a fundamental way, because that's already part of the discussion, and literally Issa Kaman. And the Ruba de Lesa Kaman is just a tool we're trying to bring in order to establish facts. And maybe it's not a worthy tool. So to that, the Gemara considers that well, here are some cases where the Torah actually is working off that assumption. But the Torah does seem to credit a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. Here are a bunch of dinim, which only work if we take that as an assumption. But then you'll say, as the Stipe and others ask, well, come on, these aren't fair examples. These are overwhelming examples. So yeah, it's true that everyone has to draw the line somewhere. Right? So where we make decisions in life, whether halacha or otherwise, so we decide whether to cross the street or whether to drive a car or whether to assume that our parents are really our parents and not aliens who took over their bodies yesterday. Right? So there's always a possibility that it's something else. But in life, we work off chazakas and roves to a certain extent, right? In life, we all know that we make life and death decisions based on presumptions. So on some level, a Ruba de Lesa Kaman kind of thinking is necessary for a normal, healthy function. The assumption that, you know, probably the people who live in my house were not replaced by aliens yesterday and are the same people. It's possible that someday, you know, right? You don't know exactly, but we function. For all intents and purposes, even life and death purposes, we function working off that assumption.
Or that that's how Ruth Bachman explains it also. He has the intense muscle of asking everyone in the room. He has the intense.
Okay, so Baruch Shekivanti, if that's the case. So, essentially, last week. Right, so, in any event, so clearly there's got to be a point at which a Ruba de Lesa Kaman works. Right? The question is just, what are the numbers? Because if the numbers are high enough, everybody accepts in life and in halacha a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So what the Gemara is saying is, well, we could look to the Torah and see that that kind of rove is validated. But these examples are all problematic examples, and each one has its own reputation. But it's also problematic because it wouldn't really tell us anything about a 51-49 Ruba de Lesa Kaman. If you had a standard default, but there's a pretty large percentage of cases that default, so then you wouldn't have to worry about that. So you need it to be approached also as a din. So you could say, especially if you say according to the possibility in Rashi and Daf Yud Beis and Aleph, that Ruba de Lesa Kaman is, in the end of the day, learned out from Acher Rabba Mahatos also. But we just need to go through this whole discussion to figure out if it is in Acher Rabba Mahatos. So then you could say that the whole discussion flows as follows. That Ruba de Lesa Kaman does not tell us what the truth is. But nonetheless, we have a pasuk in Chumash that tells us that we have the right to live our lives based on a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. Even though it's not really conclusive factually, but that's a din, that's a chiddush from the pasuk. And that basically, when you have a fork in the road and you don't know which way to go, so if one is more likely than the other, it makes sense to say, take that path. Even though it's certainly possible that it's not the right path. But as a policy, that's the more likely. We can't say the two paths are equally likely. And parenthetically, without really explaining it here, so the idea that a kavua is different than a rov, a kavua kamechza mechzadami, what we're saying is kamechza mechzadami, there's no longer one side that makes more sense than the other. That when the suffix was created in a stationary situation, that whatever logic we have to say, well, you have these two equal possibilities, they're not equal, take A instead of B, in a kavua situation, that logic doesn't apply. But otherwise, in a cold departed situation, so you don't know what to do, so then, since the two possibilities are not equal, you have the right to do the possibility that's more likely. But it's difficult to bring in Ruba de Lesa Kaman into that category, because Ruba de Lesa Kaman, either you want to say that, like Reb Shimon Shkup says, that we're bringing in something that's outside of the discussion until now, Or because the Ruba Delesta Kaman is generally trying to establish something in a more significant way. So we're a little bit stuck because technically speaking, it's a rov is a rov is a rov. So if Acharav and Mahatos, we should include it. But on the other hand, there are these weaknesses. So we don't want to take a Ruba Delesta Kaman off the table completely because we know Ruba Delesta Kaman clearly makes sense and exists, and we live it in life and in the Torah. But not every Ruba Delesta Kaman fits that definition. But then together with the Pasuk, it does. That because we have the din of Acharav Lahatos, which is not tied in only to factual likelihoods, it's basically a matter of policy, and since the Ruba Delesta Kaman at the end of the day is a Rov, it is included in the Pasuk, but we have to go through the whole discussion in order to clarify that theoretically it has a different role. And theoretically you could have a Ruba Delesta Kaman if the numbers are high enough where it's functioning more effectively than a Ruba Delesta Kaman, and in fact in a fundamentally different way. And here, just to bring in also back to the discussion we had about Rov HaTali B'maisa. So there, in that context, in the Gemara Bechoris, which I give you part of it when we were doing that Tosfos about Rov HaTali, that implies Rov HaTali B'maisa as an issue. So I gave you that Gemara Bechoris to look at. Now I give it to you again, but starting a little bit earlier. So you see, in that context, it's really basically in the context of a Ruba Delesta Kaman. And it's highlighting the fact that Ruba Delesta Kaman is kind of a slippery thing, because when the numbers are high enough, it's a very solid working premise that we can acknowledge almost without any other source. But we also work with it when the numbers are lower, and therefore for that we need a source. And maybe when it's variable, when it's Tali B'maisa, so then that undermines it to a significant degree. And that either min haTorah or midRabbanan, we don't want to use a Ruba Delesta Kaman, which is so sensitive to people's whims, essentially. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so now to think about this a little bit in the context of in Holchem Moment Acher HaRov, which comes up at least once a year in one Masech to the other, so I guess Bava Kama last year certainly had opportunity to talk about it, and Sanhedrin a few years before that. So this is relevant to this, the whole discussion as well, to kind of plug this in. So we know that Rov is effective, and we see from our Gemara and from elsewhere that it's effective even if the stakes are very high. It's effective in Dine Nefashos, because you will execute someone based on a Ruba Delesta Kaman of, let's say, Rov Bilos Achar Abal, that if he hid his father. So how do we know he's the father? So there's a Chazaka, there's a Ruba Delesta Kaman that he's the father, that most people are the children of their mother's husbands. So if that's the case, so then we're willing to execute based on that.
We also have a Cheskas Hetzer there.
Cheskas,
like that, doing
so. It's interesting because I mentioned yesterday that phrased in blunter terms, right? So phrased in blunter terms, that it's not really coming from the same kind of technical terminology. But that Rav Yonason Eibshitz was asked, how come we don't say that we should give priority and kibud av aim to the mother over the father, because the mother's a vadev, the father's a safek? So he answered that itself would be a bizayin to the mother to imply that that the father is not the father, is saying something about the mother. So that idea, he wasn't phrasing it in terms of Cheskas Kashrus, but it's interesting to say, saying forget about not wanting to insult her that way, but that itself should be viewed as a chazaka. That's an interesting point. But you could say they're essentially the same thing, that the Cheskas Kashrus means that she's not likely to be Mizana. So this is a more specific form of a Cheskas Kashrus, that the general Cheskas Kashrus expresses itself in the case of Gil Arayis in this specific, in this specified form. But in any event, so we're willing to use a Ruba Delesta Kaman for Dinei Nefashos. And also we know that we do that because we execute somebody based on a majority vote in a Sanhedrin. So we follow the Rov there. And in fact, we wouldn't follow a unanimous vote, according to it. That's what you're about to say?
Yeah, I was going to ask if that's truly Rov then. If we're going to, like, because Rov in general, we assume that because the majority of something happens to, like, be true or whatever, then therefore we judge everything as if it's that way. So, I mean, but if we actually have, like, an absolute majority, like, nobody dissenting,
mm-hmm.
and yet we don't execute, is that really, I guess, a case of Rov, is my question.
I
don't know if that was so clear. But.
Well, so you're saying that, I mean, it is a Rov because you have the majority voting to execute. The question is, how do you relate to the din that everyone voting? So you're saying neither? Bless me. So that should be counted as a Rov because it's a.
But that could be a different, like, mechanism for that work.
Yeah, it does come from a different place.
Yeah.
But what it just is relevant for us is that clearly we are following Rove. Like in American juries, they don't follow Rove because an American jury, you have to have a unanimous vote in order to convict. So they're not willing to say Rove, but Al Pidin, we're willing to execute people based on a Rove. So we have a Rove for very high stakes. But the Rishonim ask in a bunch of places that seems to contradict a principle that we have in a bunch of places, which is machlokus in the Gemara, but nonetheless, the idea of ein holchin b'mamon acher harov. So let's say me and Mori are in a financial dispute, and Mori has the chazaka, and I'm trying to get away from him, trying to get the money from him, and it's in his pocket. And I make my case based on a rov. I say, however it plays out, that in most cases, my version of the facts will be true. And therefore, it's more likely the correct position. So, generally, that's not going to be effective. We say, ein holchem b'mamon acher harov. So, Tosfos, and I've shown him in general, but Tosfos in a few places, raised this question that why should we say we're not going to follow a rov for mamonos when we do follow it for dinin nefashos. Aren't the stakes much higher with dinin nefashos? So wouldn't that seem to be a kal v'chomer? And it's also a little complicated because we do follow it for mammon also, so it's not across the board true, because if you have a monetary case and you go to a panel of three judges, we're going to follow rov there. Two judges say one way and one judge says another way, we're going to follow that rov. So it's not even always true. And in fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says that, tells us that from the Kal V'chomer, from the Fashos, that we know that in a case of Dinin Fashos, we will carry out the Din based on what the Rov of the Dayanim say. So Kal V'chomer, we do that in a Bez Din for Dinin Mominus too. So the whole dynamic here is very confusing. How exactly do we approach this issue? So Tosfos has different answers in different places. There may be a relationship between the answers. We'll maybe talk about that later. But Tosfos in Bava Kamma that raises this issue. So Tosfos says, well, there's a difference between the Sanhedrin, or let's say even within the realm of Mamonos, between a Bezdin of Mamonos and the Rov Dayanim. And the Rove of my saying, Mori, you owe me because the statistics are on my side. So what's the difference? So the way Tosfos over there explains it is that when we're fighting over our versions of the story, so you still have the miut. And as some of the Rishonim express it, smoch miuta l'chazaka. You have the chazaka and you also have the miut. While when it comes to the Dayanim, the minority voice is as if it's not there. So what does that mean? So Reb Chaim Brisker, in the stencils, You know, we've been through this, right? The canon, the different levels, right? So it's the second Madrega of Cheshivas or Chaim Svarim. So it's not the Sefer on the Rambam, which is the Iker canon, but the next level, Chedusha HaGrach HaLashas, because nowadays there are many more Reb Chaim Brisker Svarim that are published from secondary sources and third level sources, but this is the next Madrega after the Chedusha Reb Chaim HaLarambam. So the Chedusha HaGrach HaLashas is a short discussion of this, where essentially says that we have different kinds of roves, or different functions of roves here. That when you're talking about two people arguing who's right, who's wrong, and one's invoking a rove, so that's the din of following a rove. Or din of called the parish, a mirub parish, is about following the rove to figure out what this is or isn't. But the rove of a Sanhedrin is more similar to the din of rubo kikulo, that you have an item that is completely defined by its majority. So in order to have a bezdin, so you need a bezdin of 3 or of 23 or of 71, you need a bezdin of a full quorum. It's not just the majority that's carrying out the action. So when you have, say, a momentous case with 3 dayanim and the vote was 2-1, the psak comes from the bezdin. It doesn't come from the 2 dayanim who voted for the winner. So they all now blend to form one unit, and the rove overtakes the miyut. The miyut no longer exists. Right. Or it's similar to Rubu Kikulo. While in the case of me and Mori fighting, so you don't have that kind of dynamic. The question is, normally you would follow a rove if all things were equal. But they're not equal, because Mori has the chazaka of the Cheskas Mamon. And Cheskas Mamon, without going into all of it, but Cheskas Mamon, even when we say Ruba Chazaka, Ruba Adif, but the Chazaka of a Cheskas Mamon is clearly breaking that rule. And there could be many reasons why. Rav Nosson Gestetner, one of his Svarim, Rav Nosson Imperial, has a whole list of theories why it is. Is it because we can look at it and we can see right now that you're holding the item? Is it because it's not just about the past, it's also about what we know to be true right now? Different explanations why that is, but the Cheskas Mamon wins over the Rove. So first of all, because it's not all things being equal, the Chazaka is playing a role. And this Tosis maybe is suggesting that it's also not by itself. It's with the Miut. So what's a Miut? A Miut isn't a Rove, but it's not nothing. A Miut means that it's possible. So once it's possible, and there's a Chazaka, those two together are significant.
But in most cases, the chazaka be on the side of the miyut. We have a kava between rove and a chazaka.
Right.
What if most cases have the miyut?
Well, in that conflict, but no, you could have a miyut. It could have a rove that's overwhelming. Let's say if a rove is 100% rove, and there's no possibility.
Not significant miyut.
Right. So there's no possibility of it being true. So then we would have to reevaluate. What do we think about the fact that you have the chazaka? And then we have to ask, what's the chazaka supposed to tell us? So I mentioned some time ago, the whole concept of Cheskas Mamon really is a complex topic. Last year, we were learning Bava Kama, so we spent a lot of time on this, because the whole question of whether Hamotzi Mechaver Lo Haraya is tied in with Cheskas Mamon, the assumption is there are two opposite ideas, that you can't take away something without proof because the other person has a chazaka, so there are two sides of the coin, but it's not 100% clear that that's the whole story. So what exactly a chazaka represents is a good question. I think I mentioned a few weeks ago that last year we looked up on Wikipedia to learn about the secular equivalent to this. They say possession is 9/10 of the law. So what does that mean, possession is 9/10 of the law? It's essentially a way of saying Cheskas Mamon is very strong. It gives you a 90% vote. So is that because it's most likely that whoever is holding it is the owner? We say chazaka masha tafas yado harei shorel. Well, that's what we're asking. Is that, you know, is it tied into that specifically? Or no, it doesn't necessarily mean that and this is really to import Lumbisher terms into a secular concept, but it could be that it's exactly what it is, that maybe it's basically like a chazaka meikara, that we don't know what to do, so by default, we might as well leave it where it is, because that's the most logical path. Maybe it's more of a hanhaga rather than a birur. So is a cheskes mamon a hanhaga or a birur, essentially? So if you want to say it's a birur, so then the miut is important, because the fact that it's a possibility, there is a miut in the world that this is true about, so then it could be, and the fact that it's in your hands makes it more likely. So let's say, for example, I have a football jersey, and it's known that, so let's say I have a jersey for, what name is the team? The Philadelphia Eagles, right? So is that a raya that I was a Philadelphia Eagle? So presumably not, because the world knows who the actual players are, and that the fact that I have such a shirt, so there's a range of possibilities, right? It could mean that it was my shirt because I was on the team, or it could be that they sell these shirts to everyone, or it could be that I borrowed the shirt from someone. So you could say, well, if it was a total suffix, 50-50, was I on the team or not, then I have the shirt, so then maybe that shirt can contribute to the likelihood that I was on the team. But, or if we say that there's a decent possibility I could have been on the team, so then maybe you see me wearing the shirt, and let's say the odds were good enough, so then you see me wearing the shirt, so yes, it's true, I could have borrowed the shirt, or I could have bought the shirt somewhere else, but if the odds were significant enough, even if it wasn't a majority, but there was somewhat of a likely possibility, so then you see the shirt, and I have it, then maybe that makes it somewhat more likely. So then the stam default assumption would be that I was a Philadelphia Eagle. But if we know that there's zero chance that I was a Philadelphia Eagle, so then my chazaka on this shirt is meaningless towards that. It doesn't. So then the question is, if we're looking for this chazaka to be a birur of something, so then it's not going to help whether it's that there's some kind of chazaka if it's impossibility. Okay. So with that, so maybe we'll just say a few more words about this, and maybe we'll spill over a little bit into Sunday and then also get into a different topic. But what we can throw into the mix here is, it's an interesting question if you want to follow that kind of a formulation, that by the Dayanim, so the miut is nothing. And by other contexts of following the rov or not following the rov, the miut is something, and it also has a chazaka. So that's why it's an issue. So it's an interesting question, what exactly is the role of rov by Dayanim? So yes, it could be true that the entire Beis Din is what's bringing down the Psak, so the Rov does make the whole Beis Din into one thing. That part could be true. But it's also interesting to ask, why is that the case? Why do we follow Rov? Just intellectually, why do we follow Rov Dayanim? Yes, we have Sukkim and Makoros, but time is the Kra. Why do we follow Rov Chachamim? So you could say two ways. You could say essentially birur or hanhaga, because you could say that it's a birur, that we're trying to find out the truth. So our best efforts to find out the truth are to get wise people and try to collect chachma as much as we can. So if we have wise people to start with, and among the wise people, it's 7-3 in one way, so then it's likely that the seven votes are reflective of the truth. So from that perspective, you could look at it as a birur. Or you could say, no, it's always possible that that's not the case. But we need to have a functioning society, and therefore we need policies. And the policies have to be made by the majority. Otherwise, we have chaos. Because we can't have policies made by the minority. That doesn't make sense. So we need to have one way of deciding between two options. So the majority gets to decide. What's a nafkamina between those two perspectives? So one nafkamina would be, what if, let's say, I have three dayanim on the Bezdin? And one of these three dayanim is light years ahead of the other, is clearly far, far greater scholar than the other two put together. So let's say he votes against the other two. Would we still follow the rove? So Gilad's like, maybe, I don't know. Sorry? Is it going to come down to this issue, right? So basically, it happens to be a machlokas rishonim. The Ramban, in one place, quotes a machlokas about this. And this connects to lots of other issues, by the way, hashgafic and otherwise. But it could be that you do still follow the number of dayanim. Why? Because we need to have a policy how to decide. We need to have an organized society. And if we're going to always look for the wisest people, we may be more likely to uncover the truth, but we'll have a chaotic society. So maybe in the interest of policy and order, we have to follow the most bodies, regardless of if that actually lends to the most chachma. Now, parenthetically, like there are issues that could emerge from this that could take us all day, so just as a kind of a mar mokum. So Parsha Shoftim this year, to do a little fill-in for Parsha Shir. So we did Rishon of Shoftim this year a few months ago. So we talked there about Lo Sosum and Hadavar. They're not supposed to deviate from the instructions of Chazal or the rabbis at that time. Yom and Usmol, not to the right or to the left. So Rashi quotes the baffling Medrash that what does right and left mean? That even if they tell you right is left, the left is right. Which sounds like it means even if they're wrong. And many argue that that can't be. There's a whole Masechta in Shas that you don't follow a mistaken Bezdin. So Rav Schechter always makes this point that you don't follow a real mistake. You don't follow something you know to be wrong. So you have to understand it as that. You have to understand it to mean that afilu nirin beinecha, like the Gra puts in, that even if it looks to you like left is right and right is left, that it's such a surprising psak you never would have guessed it. But they're not objectively wrong, it's just a complete surprise to you. So then you follow, but if they're mamish wrong, you don't follow. But the thing is, some Rishonim do say that if they're mamish wrong, you do follow. Like the Ramban over there. The Ramban says that you do follow, which is the din by Kiddush HaChodesh. By Kiddush HaChodesh, we know that even if the Bezim make a mistake, we follow it. But as other Sfarim point out, as Rishach discusses with Sefer, that it's a special din by Kiddush HaChodesh. We say Atem, Atem, Afilim, Utoim, Atem, Afilim, Shogin, etc. But by other matters, if they're mamish wrong, you shouldn't follow. But the Ramban does say that you should follow. So I think it could be the Ramban L'shitaso, because the same Ramban that would say you follow the two against the one, even if you know the one is wiser, is because it's a matter of policy and Shalom Al Yisrael that we need to be able to function. So even if it's not the actual truth, we still need to have a system. Essentially, it's on Hanhaga. Hi.
Is there like a difference between like Paskening and like a din, and Paskening like a general halacha?
You mean like a discrete
like
case?
Like,
case,
you know,
right.
One specific case, and then another thing would be like
what's going to be in the Shulchan Aruch forever.
Yeah,
there should be a difference. There are some interesting differences. It's an interesting discussion to have, but I don't know if that explains this necessarily, but it's relevant. But in any event, so why am I telling you all this? Because we know from our Gemara, from Chulin Daf Yud Aleph, that the Sanhedrin is the same kind of rove as the Chanuyos. Right? So it says in one breath, Kigon tes Chanuyos for Sanhedrin. So we follow a rove in both cases. They're grouped together. So in the case of the Tes Chanuyos, is that really comparable to the Sanhedrin? So is it that in the case of the nine stores, we want to know, is this meat kosher or not, or what's our responsibility without a definite knowledge of whether it's kosher or not? But in the case of the Beis Din, in the case of the Sanhedrin, is that the same kind of thing, or is it that it actually is going to be the reality because whatever the Beis Din decides is the reality? So it's an interesting question to consider. First of all, what is the Bezdin's role? Is the Bezdin's role to uncover the truth? Or is it to give us a policy? Although it's still not going to be absolute either way, because certainly they're trying to give us the truth. But the question is, what happens if we need to choose? If we need to choose between truth and chaos, maybe we'll choose policy. But also, just to give one other area of life where this is a similar chakira in general life, so when it comes to voting and democracy, so we often talk about, as responsible citizens of a distinguished democracy that we're very fortunate to be able to partake in. So if we take we always talk about the civil responsibility involved in voting. So, and especially as Jews, we sometimes have particular concerns which force us to consider a lot of different angles in terms of voting. So yesh lachkor, you know, what is your responsibility when voting? Is your responsibility to vote for the best candidate, and that this is a way of trying to figure out what most people think is the best candidate, so that we'll ultimately get the best candidate? Or it's not necessarily about good and bad and right and wrong, but that there are interests that various people have, and a society that's going to run smoothly can only make decisions based on what most people want. You know, so if I say we could have the final on Tuesday or Wednesday, let's vote, is the voting because I'll figure out that Tuesday is objectively the better day because 3/4 of the class voted for Tuesday? Or no, there's no real better between Tuesday and Wednesday, but the only fair way to choose between Tuesday and Wednesday is what works for more of the students should be the policy of a democracy. So there's no inherent truth to Tuesday over Wednesday, but it's fair, it wins the vote, because that's how we make policy. It's better than any alternative. Any alternative would be illogical, and this is a way that makes sense. Okay, so I think we reached a certain point for this discussion. I do want to add a little bit, since we didn't discuss the other answer in Tosfos, in the different Masechta, and Tosfos and Hedrin also addresses this question, could be relevant. So maybe we'll just say a few more words about Rov, whom we meet on Sunday. Again, tomorrow we'll do the Parsha probably at 1:00, correct? Unless you hear from me differently. And after that, I think I'm going to want to skip over probably to Daf Yud Gimel or so. So try to keep up with the Gemaras in between, especially if you have time tomorrow during Seder. And we're going to try to get to these discussions. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Again, thank you for your accommodations.